Langston Hughes wrote something in the 1960s about the dream. There's a dream in this land with its back against the wall. To save the dream for one, it must be saved for all. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Lift Every Voice. It has been a disappointing 72 hours. The federal government temporarily shut down on Friday at midnight after President Trump and the White House scuttled negotiations and refused to hold a vote on a bipartisan deal that would have provided a solution for Dreamers, in addition to addressing a whole lot of other issues, like the Children's Health Insurance Program, like disaster relief, like doing something to invest more in dealing with the opioid crisis. And I'm recording this episode just moments after coming off the Senate floor on Monday, where I voted against yet another short-term funding bill that merely kicks the can down the road until February 8th without addressing any of our larger challenges as a country. To be clear, Republicans and Democrats in Congress agree on the budget. We agree on health insurance for low-income kids. We agree on a DACA fix. We agree on disaster relief. We agree on all of the things, but despite this, despite Republican control of the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, Republican leaders chose not to vote on a bill that would address all of these things. They chose instead to push us into a crisis that ultimately led to the shutdown of the government. They gave us a false choice. Pick one and only one of these items, one of these issues, and we'll do the rest later. Later. We've been hearing that for a long time. Pitting the most vulnerable in our country against one another is no way to govern. Even the Pentagon called what we're doing just days ago wasteful and destructive. I made a commitment a long time ago that I wouldn't vote for another short-term funding bill that didn't include a solution for Dreamers, and my position has not changed. Dreamers are hardworking young people who were brought to this country as kids by their parents. They don't know any other country besides the United States. They are Americans in every sense of the word, except for a document. They teach in our schools. They serve in our military. They work in our businesses. They sing our national anthem and pledge allegiance to our flag. They are Americans, and I will not leave them behind. To give you a sense of who these kids are and what's on at stake, I wanted to share some of their stories on this podcast, so you can hear from them in their own words. Their stories are simultaneously heartbreaking and inspiring. I hope that after hearing their stories, you'll be just as inspired as I am and understand why fighting for them is fighting for us. Why fighting for them is more than just fighting for immigrants. It's about fighting for the American dream. It's like fighting for the character of our country. And to the hundreds of thousands of Dreamers, please know that I see you, I hear you, I stand with you, I love you. You are my fellow American. Please do not give up hope. This battle is not over. One quick note before we jump in. Because these conversations happened over the phone, the audio is less than perfect. So keep that in mind while you are listening. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Adriana Gonzalez. I am 24 years old and I am a DACA recipient. I came from Mexico when I was 2 years old. I came to the United States with my father, my mother, and my older brother. The reason we came to America was because we were living in Mexico in a shed behind my grandma's house. And it just wasn't enough space for a growing family. And my parents were young, but they wanted the best for my brother and myself. So they decided America would be the safest place for us. Growing up, I felt more of a disconnect from my peers once I realized that I wasn't able to do a lot of the things that they could as an undocumented immigrant. You know, I wasn't able to get my driver's permit at the same time as everyone, or my license, or it just became more and more difficult to really hide my status in this country. So I became much more private and quiet, to the point where people really didn't get to know me as a person because it was so much that I was keeping from them. It motivated me to excel in school. I ended up being 9th in my class, in my graduating class in high school. I paid my way through community college, graduated with a 4.0, and then transferred to the College of New Jersey, where I've made Dean's List every semester. Finished with my bachelor's in sociology and moving towards my master's. I will be student teaching this semester, which I'm very excited about. I have worked with this population of people with disabilities ever since I was in high school. I would play soccer with children with disabilities. And then once I received DACA, I was able to work at a before and after school care program that was a mix of typically developing children as well as children with disabilities. And from there, I went to a camp in upstate New York where I was a counselor and then a supervisor for a stay-away camp for children with disabilities from ages 5 to 23, which was a really great experience, and that really was what pushed me into applying to TCNJ for their special education program. I also worked at a group home for people with developmental disabilities. It's just so humbling to work with this population of people. They really have so much more to give than people think that they do, and they're full of love and laughter and offer a lot to the world. DACA helped me losing the fear that I had every day of deportation. It allowed me to work, which was something that I wouldn't have been able to do without DACA. I was able to drive, so I was able to go to interviews and obtain these jobs. And I had a social security number, I'm able to pay taxes. So when I found out about the Trump administration rescinding DACA, I was interning at a legal defense fund in Trenton, and I was completely distraught. That day, I was asked to go speak at a rally, and I was in tears the entire time. For people to see the humanity of this situation and understand that we have lived here all our lives and know only this country and want to succeed in this country, but also want to see this country succeed. So ever since then, I, along with 8 other people, were part of a hunger strike during the week of action, which was Thanksgiving week, where we did not eat for 4 days. And during those 4 days, we were visiting Republican representatives in the state of New Jersey in order to ask them to sign on to the Clean Dream Act. It was a success to an extent because after the rally that we had and after the strike, 4 out of the 5 representatives ended up signing on. So it was very hopeful to see that we are able to make change. My DACA is up in August, and that will completely change my life. I am set to graduate in December, and if nothing is done about DACA or the Dream Act, I will be ready to teach and not be able to teach legally. And so for me, everything that I've worked so hard for, everything that I've strived for, will almost have been for nothing if I am not able to pursue my career. And I know that that's probably the case for a lot of DACA recipients or dreamers who will have their worlds turned upside down. I am hopeful we would like a pathway to citizenship, and we do not know another country. We are asking to stay because we want to help America as a whole. We are not asking to be handed anything. We want to work for it. We are trying to get jobs. We are trying to do everything legally. We just are asking that we are given that opportunity. We just want a chance to be able to do the things that we love.
My name is Kyungmin Cho, and I came from South Korea when I was 8 years old. I am currently 20 years old, and I immigrated to North Jersey, Bergen County, New Jersey. I've been living there ever since I came to the United States, so it's been about 12 years now. Growing up, I lived fairly normally. I didn't really know about my status until I was, you know, applying to colleges. Up until like junior, senior year of high school, you know, I really didn't feel different from anyone. When I found out that I was a DACA recipient through applying to colleges, I realized it was going to affect me greatly, since I wasn't able to apply for financial aid and government grants for school. So I guess I started feeling a little more different from, you know, my friends who were citizens. And, you know, it was just like a foreign feeling that I never had felt before. Since I came when I was young, it was easier to adapt, I guess. And I caught on quickly, and I started to make many friends who weren't Koreans. Middle school and high school, you know, I tried to be as involved as possible. I was class president, I was National Honor Society president, and just alongside those merits, I also tried extremely hard in high school to, you know, achieve to my maximum potential. So, and that's what one thing that I'm proud of. And as a family, you know, growing up, we had financial problems. So, you know, DACA really helped me out in ways that, you know, I was able to work. That gave me an opportunity to financially support myself while my parents were, you know, dealing through their hardships as well. So that was one thing that DACA really benefited me. I knew that my family couldn't afford for college. And, you know, when I did further research about international students and immigrants, when I found out ultimately that we can't receive any financial aid, it was a devastating experience. And I still remember, even though it was like 2-3 years ago when I was applying to colleges, that, you know, I was really down, and, you know, my friends could tell me as well that, you know, I wasn't being myself. But, you know, at that moment, like, college was everything. And, you know, that was one thing that I was really looking forward to. And the fact that I had to narrow down all my lists, that really devastated me. But fortunately enough, you know, Temple University was a merit-based scholarship, and that's where I attend now. They were lucky enough to receive a presidential scholarship, so they're covering for my full-time tuition. Once my DACA status runs out, I won't be able to work. That would really affect me. So I would have a graduate degree, I mean, like a bachelor's degree, but have no place to work at, since I won't have any permit to work here. If my DACA runs out and I can't financially support myself by paying for my own rent by, you know, working at these different places, then it'll also, I guess, defer my education. I decided to join the Army midway through my senior year. So I remember I took the oath and signed the contract before my senior year ended. Central reason why I decided to join the Army was to, I guess, solidify my stay here and just prove to everyone that, you know, I belonged here, you know, because I felt as if I belonged here. You know, I stood up for the Pledge of Allegiance every day, just like all these other citizens have for years. And, you know, just to have a different status than them legally was very disheartening. And I guess the only way that I could have finalized my stay here in the United States and just proved to everyone of my belonging here was to join the Army. I don't know what my exact standing in the Army is, but I know that my unit in Queens, New York, they still require MAVNI soldiers to come and attend monthly drills. So I have been doing so since about March of last year. Legally, we were signed under the contract of the Army, so we technically are in the Army. We go to these monthly drills just like any other soldiers would. So it's weird that you know, we're not able to receive any status, but we're doing the things that other soldiers are doing. My Army Reserve unit, since I'm a reserve soldier, I'm required to attend monthly drills. My unit is located in Queens, New York, and I live in North Jersey, so it's about like a 30-minute commute, but I have to cross the bridge over to New York City, and it's hard with school and all the leadership positions that I'm taking in school, but you know, I try to make time for the Army since it's one of the top priorities here right now. I enlisted June of 2016, so it's been about a year and a half, approaching 2 years now. It's been a long journey for me, but you know, there are many thousands of people out there that have waited a lot longer than I have, that are still, you know, grasping this hope that the Army would pull through. You know, Dreamers provide so much benefits for this country, whether it be economically, socially, or any other way. You know, Dreamers really impact this country, and I definitely want to stay in the United States. You know, my dreams and hopes are not really like, it's not like a big dream, but, you know, I just want to be a normal citizen who lives a normal life. You know, I want to graduate from college, and I want to pursue jobs like a normal citizen would. And, you know, I want to provide for my family, and, you know, that's my main concern right now. You know, being documented is extremely important, but that's going to lead me to, you know, be able to provide for my whole family. So that's a really big, important dream that I have.
I think it hit me the hardest during driver's ed, because yeah. I was like, oh, I'm not like the rest of my peers. And it was really difficult for me. And I remember very clearly taking the exam and just feeling like I was going to physically get ill, because all of a sudden everyone would somehow know that I was undocumented. So that was a really tough time. And then obviously college applications. But I did go to Essex County College for free. They do have an honors program for undocumented students. So I was able to get my associates through an honors program. I had to qualify. I had to be I graduated top 20 of my class. Overall, Dreamer narrative. I have always tried really hard. My parents sacrificed everything that they ever had to make sure that I could be someone. And I wasn't going to let them down, right? So I had to, as a child of an immigrant who migrated to the U.S., your success equates the success of your parents. And I've always wanted my parents to be successful, because my mom gave up all her dreams to make sure that I had mine. So my dream was to go to higher education, and I'm still pursuing, hoping to go back to my bachelor's once we win the Dream Act, right. And seeing what that looks like, and eventually going to law school. We got a project about what your future would look like and where you're going to go after high school. And in that moment, I felt devastated because I couldn't answer those questions like my peers could. I was dreaming about going to Stanford. I really wanted to go there. At the time, I wanted to be an oncologist, and it was like the best school for oncology. And I had all these plans. And then it was really hard for me throughout high school. You know, I thought about not going anywhere. I thought about, you know what, I'm just going to work. And I remember that I had wonderful teachers in high school. And they were like, you know, Dea, we would be really disappointed because we see your potential. And it was literally 2 weeks before the deadline for the honors program. And I told myself, you could either give up now or you could keep fighting. And I went to community college, and I went there for free, and I'm really grateful for the honors program there. Several times we've heard of family friends who were deported or who were detained, and I remember what that felt like for my family. And I remember like my parents having to check the window before leaving the house to make sure there was no one there. And I always felt really protected because I was in school, but it was painfully fearful for me to think that, okay, at one point I didn't think I would get to higher education, so there was no more school that was protecting me, and what would happen once I entered the real world and I was vulnerable and fully undocumented. You know, on September 5th, I had to make one of the hardest calls that I've ever had to make, and I called my mother, and she was crying on the other side, and she's living at home in New Jersey. That was the day that Jeff Sessions made the announcement that they would rescind DACA because of the people who are sitting in the White House. I remember that I called her and that I couldn't think of anything but having her hold my sister. And I was like, I need you to call her, and I need you to be there, and I need you to tell her that we love her. And I remember that I felt in that moment almost powerless. But then I wiped my tears, and I was like, well, I have one thing to do, and it's to fight. and I can't let this defeat me. And I always look at my best friend. Her mom's a single mother. She's actually going to graduate with her majors in criminal justice from Rutgers. And I think about when her DACA will expire and what she is going to do when her DACA expires. And a lot of the times people are like, Daya, worry about yourself. And I was like, I can't look at the people that I love and not wonder what's going to happen of their lives. The reality is that I haven't had a good night's sleep since September 5th. And that your body physically deteriorates from that. And that your mental health completely crumbles from that. And that I can attest to how difficult it is to live a life where in any second you will be fully undocumented and a priority. As for the deadlock and as for what's happening is there was a bipartisan solution that was presented. That is the truth. There was bipartisanship, and I in moments I'm shocked that that even happened, given the moment that we're in, right? But we know that there's folks who are reaching across the aisle. It's very clear that if there is no deal and that nothing has moved forward, it's because the president decided that that's something that he didn't want to do. Right. I make it a point to call my mother every day. And even if it is just to say, what are you doing? How are you feeling? I love you. And I never hang up the phone without saying I love you and hearing her say it back. Because when I am the most anxious, just hearing her voice allows me to know that I'm doing it for the right reasons and for the right people. If I'm being real with people here, I have more than 5 anxiety attacks a week. So I live my life tired. And a lot of our folks do. But surround yourself with people who are going to fill your soul and are going to fill you with love and energy. And that's the best thing we could do right now. So it's going to be hard, but I'm confident that if you ground yourself in love and encourage, that we're going to win.
My name is Elizabeth Vilches. I'm 29 years old, and I'm from Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. I was born in Puebla, Mexico, and I came to the United States when I was 7 years old. My family came to America just a little bit over 22 years ago. They came fleeing the economic crisis in Mexico, and even at age 7, I still remember my family struggling to meet their basic necessities such as food. Many times I remember that our meals would just be tortilla with some salt on it, and that's what we would live on. And so deciding to make the very dangerous trip to America was not an easy decision for my parents, but it was something that they felt they needed to do in order to ensure that their 6 and 7-year-old would not have to worry about where their next meal would come from. At first, I didn't feel very different when it came to school. You know, for me, when I was in school, everything was very normal. I was like every other kid. And it wasn't until later on when I was preparing to go to college and high school that it finally came to light that I was in a very different situation than every other student, and that it was because we didn't have any documentation that really drove the fear that my parents had. And that's when it all started to make sense. And so at that point, which was just the beginning of high school for me, that's when I really fully understood that I was somebody that was different. I only told 2 people. One was my guidance counselor, who helped me discover the situation, and then my math teacher, who's very supportive of me and wanted to see me go to college. And so I spoke to both of them about the situation, but everybody else around me, I couldn't tell them anything. It became a constant stress that really never went away until President Obama brought DACA into play and allowed me to finally be able to talk about it and not be scared that something would happen to me if anybody else found out. School was my happy place. It's something that I really enjoyed and I always did well in. I remember that one of my proudest awards was a trophy that I got for the Color It Proud contest. And it was a contest where you had to color in this picture of the American flag and then write what it meant to you, like what it meant to be, what the flag meant to you, what it meant to be in America. And it was something that I was really passionate about. It meant a lot to me. And I was able to graduate second in my class in high school, studying architecture. I was also in the Honor Society as editor of the yearbook. DACA means a lot to me. I feel that DACA has really allowed me to fulfill what I believe is my purpose in this country and in my life. One of the things that as a kid that I've held as a belief is that, you know, my parents, they sacrificed a lot to come to this country. To help me lead a better life. And so it's my responsibility to ensure that I can help uplift my family and uplift everybody around me. I believe that nobody should have to go through what my family went through to have a better life. And so I've made my life's mission to prevent people from going through what my family went through and to help them achieve their dreams. In the last three jobs that I've had through DACA and only because of DACA, I've been able to work on an incubator that allowed me to distribute over $200,000 in funding to engineering students in college and help them launch their own businesses that would employ other people. And so for me, that was just proof of what the impact I could have if I'm given the opportunity, you know, to go from a program in college that was impacting 2,000 middle school and high school students to now creating a company that has been able to hire over 800 part-time employees plus the main management team, you know, has been just amazing. It's, you know, I can't be happier, and I feel like I'm fulfilling what I was meant to do. And so for me, it became really important to, as scared as I was, to really take a stand and to voice their concerns and to bring attention to what we were going through, because if we didn't do it, there was no way that we were even going to begin to have a discussion and much less like make an attempt to win this fight. For me, before I had DACA, I was working 20-hour days, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. All you can think about is, you know, like, how am I gonna pay for my bills? How am I gonna like help my family? And, you know, when that's all you can think about, it doesn't really leave room for you to think about how can I serve everybody around me? How can I take everything I've learned and share it with those around me and help them overcome everything I've overcome, you know, because you're stuck in survival mode, and feeling like I won't be able to help is for me the biggest fear that I have. Like, I don't want to give up what I love in helping people to go back into hiding and to worrying about, you know, how do I meet my basic necessities? It's just, it's a very scary thought. You know, I only have about a year left before my work authorization expires, and I'm forced to leave. There's no solution here. And, you know, I don't want to think about that. I'd rather be hopeful that people will continue to speak out and show support and help us to pass a permanent solution so that a lot of people, including myself, don't have to live in fear of just having their lives be turned upside down. And so to paint us as things that don't deserve to be considered human beings and instead should be ripped away from our communities and sent back is the most un-American thing that could happen. And if it can happen to dreamers, what group of people here in the United States would be next? And will we allow that to be the new normal?
And so I urge you to take a stand and to help fight for dreamers, because we shouldn't want our country to become a country where people that want a better life for themselves and their families are no longer welcomed.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. As you can tell from hearing their stories, these dreamers are incredible individuals. They are making huge contributions to their communities every single day. They're about service. They're about love. They're about elevating all of us. They're teachers, entrepreneurs, organizers. There are soldiers. These are our fellow Americans, and I refuse to leave them behind. We all must refuse to leave them behind.